Blog Talk Radio.
Oh, that's great. That sounds terrific. Thank you.
About slavery.
Welcome, Kohan. How are you?
Welcome. Thank you, my sister, for inviting me and having taking the time out to review the book and to give us a chance to come on and try to share some information with your audience as well as enlighten our people as a whole. I was inspired to begin to write this particular book about 17 years ago in my search and quest for reparation and studying. Also at that time, I was a minister pastoring in a church, and I was trying to get my people to see that a lot of things that we have been taught in school and read in other books have not been telling the whole story.
Let me ask you this. Back in the 70s, Alex Haley put out a miniseries called Roots. And per the way that show or that miniseries depicted slavery, your book totally contradicts that. Would you say that to be the case?
In many ways, it does, because it does not tell about the other thing that took place. And you saw the reaction to many black people as to that particular movie, because they took it to heart as being actual fact. Now, I'm not saying that slavery didn't exist. It did exist. But what I'm saying, it was not just black people.
Mm-hmm.
You had whites as well who was enslaved. And in my book, we bring these things out. And I'm not the only one who addressed this. Many times we as people, we get locked into a certain mindset, and we will not go any further than what that particular mindset would allow us. Sometimes you have to step outside the box. When I say the box, I mean mainline history, mainline religion. You got to step out in the outer realms and then look back. And I was able to do that in my research, and I have the documentations here to solidify everything that I'm saying, because our motto is documentation beats conversation.
Well, let me ask you, basically, per the way your book reads, black people should not have a chip on their shoulder about slavery.
No, they should not have a chip on their shoulder about slavery. And I'm going to attempt to show us why in this hour, this message we have to be on the air, because we've been fed as black people a lot of wolf cookies. For instance, before you read the book, when you read the word slave, what came to mind? What people came to mind?
Black people.
Okay. You never thought that white people was ever enslaved, right?
Correct.
Okay. But now you're finding out that what they've been giving us is totally untrue. Totally what they gave us was a one-sided story, promoting them as being superior and black people being inferior.
Well, let's start here. From the way you put it in your book, it's an impossibility that they could have got 100 million slaves over here by ship. Is that correct?
My question is 100 million black folks here now? We've been multiplying. We lost a lot of people. It's utterly impossible, based on the time that this allegedly took place, whether you choose the year 1619 or 1555.
Mm-hmm.
Bring 100 million people, if you lost half of them, from the continent of Africa, which is, we know that wasn't a name. That's something that came up later. I won't deal with that now. Let's use it for sake of conversation.
Mm-hmm.
You can only travel the Atlantic 6 months out of the year, and not all the time, because of storms at sea, weather conditions, and that. Let's take into account also what would be the largest vessel at that time that could carry enough people to make that voyage. The largest ship at that time only could carry 100 people, and that's counting crew members, provisions, and cargo.
So there's no way that they could have gotten that many over here in the time frame that they say they did.
No, because even at that, you were still making trips back and forth.
Today.
And
okay. So black people
tell you things. Do the math. The map will speak for itself. It's not happening. You need 100 ships making regular trips, come across that ocean.
And I understand that. So when black people say things like, I want to go home to Africa, they really don't know what they're saying, correct?
Most correct. And I want to, can I address that just briefly?
Yes, please.
Because there is an article written by a young man by the name of, I believe his name was Paul Barton.
Mm-hmm.
He wrote a book a few years ago called Italian blacks from Africa and elsewhere.
Mm-hmm.
It plainly states here, and I ask my beautiful wife to join us today. She's going to read from his article, Ancient Americas. She's going to read the paragraph where it says the important lesson here. Listen.
The important lesson here is that not all black people are Africans.
Mm-hmm.
South America also lies in the same latitude as Africa and Australia. And so, in the principle, it is possible for black people to have evolved independently on the American continent.
You hear that?
Mm-hmm.
Did you understand what you just said?
Yeah.
See, the guy by the name of, what's his name, David Blumenbach, a German anthropologist, him and Cunningham, they went out to set a thing called the races, and they locked all black people in the same bag. Negroes or Negroes are not Afrikaners.
Okay,
to settle in. That's
so
the danger.
Negroes are not Africans.
No. Negroes and Afrikaners, they're not the same. They're the same color skin, but they're not the same. And you got to check on blood type, and we'll get into that later on.
Okay.
Because we have the same color skin does not make us be kin.
Okay,
and
so
there's a place I told you to look up called the Rio Negro River. That river is in South America. That it's not over there in the continent called Africa or the Congo. It is in a place called South America.
So when the term is used, Africa or African, that's not the original name for black people or the continent, correct?
That's correct. My wife did some research on that. That is a fable, though wild accepted. Over 750 million people live over in the continent. Over 1,000 different languages. How can you say that in that little language called African language?
Hmm. Okay.
Think about it. There's no language called African language. Even the word Africa is not an African word.
Okay. Let's deal with slavery. So
okay.
When we talk about slavery today in conversation, people, like you say, they think of it as just black people. One group of people were slaves. You're
uh-huh.
saying that there were black people that owned white slaves.
Yeah.
Is that correct?
That is correct. Let me go to an article here. And we want to address that. One second.
Okay.
Let me go and deal with, and if anybody want to do this at home in your audience, they can type in white slave, black slave owners in their search engine. All right?
Okay.
So let me know that I ain't making this up.
Okay, while he's looking for that, if you'd like to weigh in on this topic, call us at 347-850-8390. Again, the number to call is 347-850-8390. This is the story of slavery as never heard before. Mr. Cohan is telling us that slavery is not the way Roots depicted it.
No,
black
it is
war
not.
Is
We're going
black-
to, I'm going to ask my wife once again to read from Robert M. Groom's record. Will you please read, sweet?
Robert M. Groom in The Johnson Family, African-American Owners of White and Black Slaves, has revealed the fact that blacks owned white slaves in America. He also notes that a legal precedent for lifelong slavery in America was established by a black slave owner with regards to one of his black slaves. On April 10, 1606, the Virginia Company of London was granted a royal charter by King James I, awarding it a large tract of land in present-day Virginia, Delaware, and Maryland. On May 13, 1607, three small ships.
You hear that?
I did.
Okay.
Susan Consonant, Godspeed, and Discovery arrived at Cape Henry, sailed up the James River, and landed at present-day Jamestown, which is Jamestown, following a 131-day voyage crowded in damp, cold, foul-smelling holds in the darkness beneath the decks. 104 settlers, including 12 servants, disembarked and established a rough log fortress.
Now, this happened then, all right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Stay with me.
According to the African-American chairman of President William Clinton's Commission on Race, Duke University professor John Pope Franklin, these newcomers, who happened to be black, were simply more indentured servants.
Not slaves.
Mm-hmm.
They were listed in the census count of 1623 and 1624, and as late as 1651, Negroes whose period of service had expired were also being assigned land much the same way that it was being assigned to whites who had completed their indenture.
Wait a minute. You had black and white folks who came here, and the deal was they came as indigenous servants, and after serving your time with your master, you was given land. All right?
Mm-hmm.
This is 1623, 1624. We're going to go on a little bit further. Read.
During the first half century of existence, Virginia had many Negroes as servants, and the record reveals an increasing number of free Negroes.
What kind?
Free Negroes. Well, let me stop it right there. So your book totally contradicts history as we know it. So you're saying if the audience would go and research as you did, they will find out that your account is true.
Yes.
Okay.
Not only that, my wife and I, we traveled.
Okay.
Went to a few places and looked at a few things, and we'll bring a few names up because we know that a lot of our people, as probably as black people, did not come with slavery. It came after Reconstruction.
Okay.
And that's another book. But
you said in your book that William Ellis was one of the richest blacks in the Carolinas, and not only did he own slaves, but he bred slaves?
That's right. We'll get to that, too, but I don't want to get too far ahead. I want you to hear this out. Just 1 second. You still with us?
I'm listening.
Okay, come on. Read love.
White and black servants joined the same households, working, eating, sleeping, and running away together. Their term of service could be extended for a large number of minor offenses, including marrying or having children without permission.
Hmm.
As a result of extensions, many white redemptioners served their whole life as a servant.
They were served with slaves for what? Life.
Okay, but so in your book, you say that if a white person was a slave, they were enslaved for life. But if a black person was a slave, they were only a slave for a period of time.
It depends on where they were. And like I said, we had one case where a black slave owner wanted to keep one of his slaves and make him a permanent slave, and he filed a lawsuit against the slave owner. They could file lawsuits against the owner because the deal was only for 7 years.
Okay, so you're saying in your book that black people that were enslaved had rights, and they had the right to go to a court of law and sue their masters.
Right. It's in the book. Let me go a little bit further, add a little bit more to this. 1650. Now, remember, all black folks are supposed to have been in slavery, but if we got black folks and free blacks owning people as far back as the 1400s, 1600s. Will you read, please?
Okay.
In
1651. Okay. I'm getting some feedback off of my computer for a second. Just a second. Okay, go ahead. Are you there? I am getting a feedback somewhere. Are you there? I'm sorry, I got a feedback somewhere.
A simple and inexpensive way to get this season's hottest trend color is to
get it straightened out.
Hold on 1 second. My board has gone crazy.
I guess it has.
We can't find, and I can't even find a problem.
We're showing them layers, and you can virtually mix any color together.
For whatever reason.
Okay.
I'm sorry. It has never done this before. I apologize.
That's all right.
Came nowhere. This is not me. This is Blog Talk interrupting with the commercial, and I'm not sure why they're doing that.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to let the commercial run its course, and hopefully it won't do it again.
Hot pink is super girly and cream satin.
No logical reason why that just happened.
Release.
Because we don't do the commercials. Blog Talk does the commercials, and for some reason it has given me a commercial. in the middle of my show.
Hey, that's something.
Okay, that's it. I'm hoping.
Oh. That it?
Okay. Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
We'll go back and we'll start at 1651, Anthony Johnson.
Okay.
In 1651, Anthony Johnson, a Negro, was given 250 acres as head rights for purchasing 5 incoming white redemptioners. In 1652, John Johnson, Anthony Johnson's eldest son, purchased 11 incoming white males and females and received 550 acres adjacent to his father. There were a number of additional Virginia land patent representing grants to free blacks of from 50 to 550 acres for purchasing white redemptioners.
You hear that?
Let me ask you, while she's, let me interrupt, just a second. Is she reading from your book or where is she reading from?
It's from the book. I've got it on my PowerPoint.
Okay.
I'm reading my PowerPoint presentation, my slide presentation, but all of this is in the book.
Okay, what page is she up? Because I'm sorry, I wasn't following.
It's going to be hard because I'm reading from PowerPoint.
Okay, gotcha.
You have to read the book, so I want people to read the book.
Okay.
And I just skipped on, she would get the whole shit by reading the book.
Okay.
So she's reading from PowerPoints, from my PowerPoint presentation, which all of this is in the book.
Okay.
Because
okay? I was going to follow with it, but okay, so she's reading out the PowerPoint. Okay, go ahead.
Yeah.
But we got a lot of questions we need to get to as far as other things we want to touch on in the book. Is she got a lot more she's got to go with?
No. We can stop it, but I want to go back to, so people don't think that I've lost my mind,
okay. That
we had a black historian named J.E. Rogers who wrote a book called Africa's Gift to America.
Okay.
1961. And on this page 61, I'm going to ask her to read out of his book, not mine, but out of his book. And so you know that this is nothing new.
Okay, who's the author of this book?
His name is J.A. Rogers. Most black historians who prior to his being one, they read his works.
And his
I
book
myself,
is called...
I'm one of the few Negroologists, like I told you before, that exist in America. So I'm not a black historian, I'm a Negroologist.
Okay. And his book is called?
Africa's Gift to America.
Africa.
Now, this book right now in hardback, it may cost you about $150. You may find it in paperback, but most people don't want to pay that kind of money for a book. Well, we do.
We're not talking about your book costs $150.
No. Mine's only $20.
Okay, right. Okay.
She's going to read from J.A. Rogers from his records. I'm going to...
Early Virginia Negroes bought white people. Finally, Negroes bought white people in America as early as the 1640s.
How early? 1640 were buying white people. Negroes were. You still there?
I am. No, I'm listening to you. I thought I was waiting on her. Is she finished?
No, she's reading, so she got to do it.
I'm following with you, yes.
Okay. The United States Guide to Virginia says, in the 17th century in Virginia, Negroes used to import white servants and received head rights to land.
We read that. We're going to skip down to when you pass the law because you can't keep buying white folks.
These first Africans were variously called Niger. Okay. Virginia, as we see in Henning's statutes, passed laws 5 times prohibiting the purchase of white people by free Negroes. Act 5, 1670, reads, no Negro or Indian, though baptized and enjoying their own freedom, shall be capable of any such purchase of Christians, but yet not debarred from buying their own kind. By Christian was meant white.
It was meant white.
That a Negro was a Christian made no difference.
Okay, so during slavery, it got to a point that you could not buy a white slave.
Well, they was trying to pass laws.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's in Virginia. That's not all the country. That's just in Virginia.
That's in Virginia. Okay, so you were saying in your book that white slaves came over on the ships as well, and they came from places like you're saying, Europe, Ireland, and Scotland?
Yes. Matter of fact, I have an article here talking about, just a second, we have here, we're going back as far as 1711 A.D.
Mm-hmm.
And it says, you start reading right here.
7-Eleven.
A little louder, baby.
7-Eleven through 1492 A.D. African Moors ruling Southwest Europe centuries, dark and whites in this area, especially Porto, which was the first example of a Negrito, that's an African, republic in Europe. Black Celts and Black Vikings, vexed with the Scandinavia people, a prominent Viking of the 11th century was Thornhall, who was aboard the ship that carried the early Vikings to the shores of North America.
We're going to drop down and talk about black slavery in England. Well, black slaves in England for 400 years. Please read you right here.
The black blood type is common even in Nordic Europe, where intermixing has been happening since antiquity. Black slavery lasted in England for about 400 years, from 1440 to 1834, during which time much intermixing occurred.
You hear that?
I did.
So it goes way back, and we can go on back and on back. This is why I tell you all the time, we have been on this planet longer than any race of people on the planet.
Okay, let's start right there then, because you say that blacks were here when the White House was started. We were already here.
We said when the question I asked a lot of white people, we call them, or European, they're not white, they are Caucasian, whatever. When did the first white man put his foot into what he called the New World?
Okay.
When did he arrive here, and how did he get here?
So we're not talking about Columbus.
Oh, no. Columbus, I said when the first one. If you go to Columbus, you still got a problem because, you know, we was here for Columbus.
Okay.
The Washitas or the Moors, or Moo, as they call it, was here long before the so-called Native Americans.
Okay. So
when records show about guy about, you had Ivan Sherman wrote a book that came with Columbus. Laurent Bitter wrote a book called It Came for the Mayflower, and there was a white author, Canadian author by the name of Michael Bradley, wrote a book called The Voyage of the Dawn, Black Discovery of America. And he talks about in this book how that for 200,000 or 300,000 years, blacks was already in this land that you call America.
Okay, so the blacks that were already here were called the Washitas and or the Moors?
Called the Moors or Washitas.
Okay. So those people basically are the people that don't have to obey the laws of this land, correct?
They do now because of what it took place, because of what? Reconstruction, remember?
Mm-hmm.
Because of Reconstruction.
Okay.
They changed a lot of laws. They changed a lot of the landmarks. They put laws in place where it herded you into a servant position.
But not every black person is a Moor or a Washita.
No, they're not. It's based on blood type.
They go by blood type. And
yeah.
So, but the blood types have been mixed, so how can one tell if one's a Moor or not? Or
one
a
thing, you have to step in there and claim your heritage as because of, I guess, based on your color, because of the mixing of the blood, you know, that's a problem. But something deeper than your biorhythm will tell you whether or not you are or not. Because you'll find a connection to the land.
Okay, there's a connection to
that. That nurturing connects to the land where you're at.
Okay. Your book states things like our first president was a black man. You're saying that the first president was actually John Hanson.
Yes, John Hanson. He was the first president of the Continental United States, and you had six more Moors who followed after him.
Okay, so
John
you said from 1781 to 1782, John Hanson was the president of the United States, and he was a black man.
United States, uh-huh. And I have not only just records, we have records on that. Matter of fact, John Hanson, now what I want people to look at, and I want to slow down. If the country, they formally this country in 1776,
mm-hmm.
so-named in Philadelphia,
mm-hmm.
so from 1776, and remember, George Washington was a general,
okay.
And he became the president of the Constitution of the United States in 1789.
Mm-hmm.
So you tell me for 13 years this country ran without leadership?
Probably not.
Okay,
he was the Continental
Congress general, not the Constitution. He was of the Continental Congress when they fought against the British. And one of the things that they stole from him is the fact, and write this down, Every October the 13th in Maryland is John Hanson Day. Give them another thing you look at. Thanksgiving, that everybody celebrates, the Indians and the Pilgrims, has nothing to do with the Pilgrims and the Indians. It was John Hanson in celebration of Washington's victory over the British at Yorktown. He established, and I will read from the record, hear what it said.
Well, you also said that during a time in our history, color was not the issue when they were picking leaders. It was about who was the most competent.
Competent, qualified person who had the education to do so. And they can read, because, you know, a lot of our people go overseas and be educated, but like we were reading earlier, and I know we don't have enough time, but many of our people was able to read and write, cipher, blacksmith, carpentry, and all these things. We was taught in history that black folk was inferior, they was dumb, lazy, couldn't read, and all these things. That is not the case.
Okay. So you're saying, well, who is it that taught these black people to read? You're saying the masters taught them to read?
Well, some of us were reading, remember, they taught them to read and write in the language of the masters. We had our own language.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
You know, no people is a people not having a language.
Okay.
In a form of communication. And we have one. As a matter of fact, if you're ever in Dallas, any of your listeners in Dallas, go to Fair Park, go by the Women's Museum. There is a commandment stone out there that's written. If you look in the upper part of that granite stone, you will see a writing. That is the ancient Negroid writing. That is his Lashon Kodash. The Jews took it and called it Hebrew. There is no such language as Hebrew. It's either Chaldean or Yiddish. That language and the top of that writing at Fair Park and all over the United States and all major places, that is your language. That is the mark to prove that you was here before the white man or anybody else came here. Your language proves this.
Wow.
Another thing you can go by, you go by agriculture.
Mm-hmm.
You only find sweet potatoes written out of South America.
Mm-hmm.
How'd they get here?
Mm.
Certain things, corn, certain, if you study this thing according to agriculture, it'll tell you where a thing is indigenous at. It ain't grown here. And back to slavery, they started passing laws called the Negro Sandra Act. You know, we can go on and on, but I want to get back to the Dixie Sisters on black slave owners.
Okay.
Once again, I'll have my wife to read a few paragraphs, and we'll talk a little bit more. Is that all right?
Okay.
All right, we're doing a little study today. Y'all, I know some of y'all out there flipping your wig and want to know this Negro is crazy. I am a Negro, and I'm proud to be Washita. I claim my heritage. We're going to read now.
The fact is large numbers of free Negroes own black slaves. In fact, in number disproportionate to their representation in society at large. In 1860, only a small minority of white owned slaves.
Uh-oh.
According to the U.S. Census for the last year, that last year, before the Civil War, there were nearly 27 million whites in the country. Some 8 million of them lived in the slaveholding states. The census also determined that there were fewer than 385,000 individuals who owned slaves. Even if all slaveholders had been white, that would only amount to about 1.4% of whites in the country, or 4.8% of Southern whites owning one or more slaves.
Read.
In the rare instances when the ownership of slaves by free Negroes is acknowledged in the history books, justification centers on the claim that black slave masters were simply individuals who the freedom of a spouse or a child from a white slave owner and had been unable to legally manumit them.
Emancipate, in other words.
Let me jump in there. In your book, you say in 1860, there was at least 6 Negroes in Louisiana who owned 65 or more slaves.
I believe that is correct. We can validate that. We'll go here and we'll read from the this comes from the Dixie Census Record, the United States Dixie Census Record. Okay. And anybody want to look at this, you can go on online once again, type in your search engine, white slaves, black slave owners.
In 1860, there were at least 6 Negroes in Louisiana who owned 65 or more slaves. The largest number, 152 slaves, were owned by a widow, C. Richards, and her son, P.C. Richards, who owned a large sugarcane plantation.
Mm-hmm.
Another Negro slave magnate in Louisiana with over 100 slaves was Antoine Duvalot, a sugar planter whose estate was valued at, in 1860 dollars, $264,000.
I think that was 1860, wasn't it? Year 1860.
Year 1860, yeah, because in the dollar at that time, this is how much he was worth, yeah.
Was $264,000.
Right.
Right, keep watch this.
That year, the mean wealth of Southern white men was $3,978.
The most white the white man had back then was $3,000. This Negro had was worth $264,000. Mm-hmm. One of the largest.
Mm-hmm. So your history or your research rather tells you that black people were not just some people who were. Enslaved, they were also businessmen back in that time as well.
As well, because remember, the misnomer most folks think is fake slaves. They say, well, all black folks were enslaved from 1619 up to 1863 when Abraham Lincoln supposed to gave us emancipation and freedom. That is not true, because you got Negroes or black people owning people all the way up until the late 1900s.
So you think that they completely altered the history of slavery just to make black people look bad?
Yes. I mean, you can't. The only way you're going to keep people serving is to take and steal their mind. You often really say a mind's a terrible thing to waste.
Right.
What about when you steal a man's mind? You take away his culture. You take away all the things by integrating and mixing and snatching certain things down. We were taught no longer to look to self, but look to someone beyond self. And that's where Christianity came in. There's a book by Carter G. Woodson, The Education of the Negro Before the Civil War, how it was Christianized. Please get the book, because Christianity was used as a tool to make you be what you are today.
I think you mentioned that there was a black Bible.
It's called the Slave Bible. And I want to invite anyone that would like to go to Natchez, Mississippi, and go to William Natchez Johnson's house there at 201 State Street. And William Natchez Johnson was a black man who owned slaves in Mississippi, has a mansion right there at 201 State Street. Go inside. Right now it's a museum. Go inside and rest inside the door. As you walk in the door in his main living room to the left is a slave Bible.
Okay, let me say something that I know is going to upset a lot of black people, but this is something that you say in your book, that we are not owed reparations. This country does not owe black people any reparations. How do you come to that?
That comes to the fact, not only that, based on the fact that you had Negroes who owned white slaves, number two, that according to the 14th Amendment to the Constitution of these United States, Section 4, it tells you that no slave, revolt, or emancipated slave can ever charge a debt to the state of this country. You can't not do it.
Okay, so you say what we're asking for, we shouldn't be asking for reparation, we should be asking for our land?
Not asking, but reclaiming.
But reclaiming. And,
yes.
And that land would be what land?
The land that we'd be reclaiming back would be, it would be over. Now, if you look in, that was a lady by the name of Ms. Gaston Turner. Mm-hmm. That was a lawsuit filed against the United States, Henry Turner Ayers versus the United States. Mm-hmm. It was three million acres of land that belonged to the people, to these people. Louisiana, Arkansas, Mississippi belonged to African Americans. In the 1940s, the natural strip of land was again verified to exist as not belonging to the United States or the Louisiana Purchase.
Okay.
Own these states, but you won't go in and claim the land. And you got to buy it back now because it's called eminent domain.
So you can't just claim it.
You got to go buy it back.
You got to go buy it back. Okay, so then we can't claim it.
Yeah, you can claim it.
Well, yeah, I guess you could. That doesn't make them going to give it to you. But again, let me ask you, you were saying that the Klan, the Ku Klux Klan, as we know it, was organized to drive black people out of political office.
Anyone that was Republican, and back then majority of your people in political power were blacks, and they were Republicans. They were not Dixiecrats or Democrats. They were Republicans. And in 1860s, I forgot the guy's name, but they created the Ku Klux Klan as a military part of the Dixiecrats to force and kill anyone that was Republican. That's why voting was so powerful. If you went to the polls to vote, they asked how you voting. And then you say how, and if you say Republican, they shot you.
Mm.
The reason being,
just
once again,
if you voted Republican, they would shoot you.
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
Because back then, and you know, people talk about being one-fifth human in the Constitution.
Mm-hmm.
That talk about that when the power to vote came up, they wanted to use certain properties, slaves or whatever, as a right to vote. The law says if you're going to use the slaves for voting right, then we're going to use our chickens, our horses, and our plow because it's all considered property. You can't be property one part of the year and then be considered a citizen the next. So that's where that come in at. So the deal was because so many blacks was in power, and I have a list, I have a book that's written talk about all the blacks who were in legislative power that you can get a hold to that you might need to read. And it talks about how we ran Congress and in the Senate. It's called American History in Black and White. David Barton writes about it. But we have more writers and talk about all these black men who and black women who was in power.
Mm.
It behooved them to start terrorizing and killing up black folks and trying to scare them not to go to the polls and vote because voting is a power.
So when black people hear that, or black people say, rather, that we've got our first black president and Barack Obama's made history and all that, that's really not true.
No. You had not only John Hanson, but we had a list of other blacks.
Mm-hmm.
John Hanson, number one.
Mm-hmm.
President Richard Henry Lee, number two. Number three, Ellis Bouteille. Four, Thomas Mawson. Five, John Hancock. Six, Nathaniel Groen.
Mm-hmm.
Arthur S. Sinclair. And Cyrus Griffin. They was all Moors.
Wow.
You say
okay.
John Hancock? Yeah. He had more ancestry.
Okay, so for those people who have just heard the term Washita and just heard the term Moor, maybe for the first time, excuse me, can you elaborate on what that exactly means?
Well, what it means that it was a people in this land long before the whites, the so-called Native Americans who came through the Bering Straits, who occupied this continent. They were called M-U-U or M-U.
Mm-hmm.
And they became known as Moor.
Mm-hmm.
They've always occupied this land. They've always been here.
Mm-hmm.
And it is their land, it is our land that we're in now. The word Moor is M-O-O-R, where they termed it.
Okay.
The word Washita has two spellings. One way to spell it is W-A-S-H-I-T-A-W, and the other one is spelled in the French terminology, and I got to look that one up because it always throws me. O-U-A-C-H-I-T-A.
Mm-hmm. And so
look them up. That was a book written by the Empress Bernice Gaston L. Bay, who wrote a book called We Are the Washitas, The Antiwan Returns.
And the Washitas were here long before they brought the first slave ship over here.
Yeah, that's what remember. They were called Negroes.
And you also say that African American people, black people, whatever you want to call them, were from all over. We weren't just centralized in any one part of the world. We were all over.
It's an insult to put me in a corner and say we all came from right here. When everywhere you turn, you got black all over this planet.
Mm-hmm.
You own the whole planet.
So when they make us believe that Africa is where we came from and then they brought us over here, that's just not true.
That's psychological enslavement. And thanks to Dr. Naeem Akbar, it's called the changing images of psychological slavery. That's psychological slavery. That's to make you hate the land you brought to when it's already your home.
So let me ask you, when we look at slavery the way that we've always understood it, what do you think that did to us in terms of conditioning our minds?
It took away your self-esteem, took away your drive, and also separated you from your spirituality because you are not Christians. It made you religious and not spiritual. Therefore, if you're religious, you'll do anything.
Okay, so when they did that, it was intentional, not by mistake. It was intentional that they put this information out there so that it made us when people say things like slavery caused the black man to do this or slavery caused the black man to do that, that's really not true then based on what your book is saying. You know,
it's
when they
not
say, well,
true,
the black
and
man
it's a
cop-out,
and it's misleading, and it has ripped our people as a whole and as a nation.
Okay.
Even during the Marcus Garvey era, by going back to Africa, they should have looked into the history. How can you go back to where you've never been?
So when it says that, you know, we came over here and we're separated.
Everybody can say that now. Please don't get misconstrued. Because some folks were brought in of dark color skin.
Okay.
Everybody.
Okay.
Not everybody.
What I took away from your book is do not use slavery as a crutch.
No.
Okay. So when we see what they claim that we're the biggest people on the welfare roll, the welfare wasn't even established for black people, for what you say.
No, it was designed for their people. Welfare, Social Security, and all those things were designed for their people. You just happen to get on board.
Mm.
As a friend of mine said, you are running around in another man's stuff.
Something you mentioned in your book that I found fascinating, you say after the Civil War that the whole thing with the squatters' laws and the homestead came about for what reason?
I'll tell you what. Let's do that. Can we do that for a second?
Yes.
Okay. It's called White Slavery, a Cause of the Civil War.
You repeat that. The title of it is what?
It's called White Slavery, the Cause or One of the Cause for the Civil War.
Okay, go ahead.
Okay, she's going to read from one of the excerpts.
Okay.
It is interesting to note that one of the causes of the American Civil War, also known perhaps more correctly as the war between the states, was the threat of slavery to the white working class in the north of the United States. Lawrence R. Tinzer and A.D. Powell have produced research into this little-known subject. The institution of slavery had existed in every one of the northern states throughout the colonial period, and such slavery was not limited to black slavery. White political prisoners and petty criminals from Britain were sold and brought to the colonies as slaves. During the 1850s, the South's plan to nationalize slavery was merely to reintroduce in it the North where it had previously existed just 50 to 75 years earlier.
Keep going.
With so many white parter slaves in the South to begin with, the idea of expanding slavery to include white laborers in the North moved slavery from a matter of color to a matter of class.
Keep going.
Southern politicians frequently pointed out that the slavery in Greece and Rome was based on social status, not on color.
Please keep going.
They also called attention to the fact that the slavery in the Bible was not Negro slavery.
Please read.
Political materials for the presidential campaign of 1856 include references to the literal enslavement of white people and illustrate the extent to which the idea had developed.
So you were going to explain the squatter's law and the homestead.
Well, see what happened, and if people heard the thing about the carpetbaggers,
yes.
Remember you had a lot of blacks who fought with the Union.
Mm-hmm.
The purpose was to fight with the Union because no country exists with two currencies. You had the Southern currency and the Northern currency, right?
Right.
So the blacks in the South who were rich, like Dubalak, when the war was over, they had no money no more because their money was no good. So many of them went north looking for jobs and trying to save their farms while they were going north. You're talking about white flight. What about black flight? The white folks started easing back to the South, taking over big, large pieces of land and claiming it, called it squatter's right and homestead right.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Okay. Other words, if you left your house and you were gone a period of time, I move in it. When you come back, if you don't come back in a certain length of time, it's mine.
Sure. And so they were there. They were in the north looking for land, and I mean looking for work. And in the south, their lands was being taken from them.
Yeah. They come back. Your farm ain't took them. You got white folks. So what you doing? And men and fire, well, what you doing on my land? It ain't your land anymore. It's my land. And they start passing what they call squatter's right and homestead right.
Hmm. Okay. So
they stole the land.
Take away from your book. I mean, when they read your book, what do you want them to walk away knowing?
Knowing the fact that, number one, don't get mad at me. I'm just a researcher. And really, I like for them to get the chip off their shoulder. Let's unite. As I told you before, I know we're getting sort of close to the end of the program,
mm-hmm.
but there was a poem that I loved.
Please read the poem.
Well, we'll get that up, and I'll get the missus. You know, I get excited. I mean, right now, this is one of my pet peeves. I'm excited. I'll ask her to read from this poem.
Okay. One basic truth can be used as a foundation for a mountain of lies. And if we dig down deep enough in the mountain of lies and bring out that truth to set it on top of the mountain of lies, the entire mountain of lies will crumble under the weight of that one truth. And there is nothing more devastating to a structure of lies than the revelation of the truth upon which the structure of lies was built, because the shock wave of the revelation of the truth reverberate and continue to reverberate throughout the earth for generations to follow, awakening even those people who had no desire to be awakened to the truth.
So that's what I want you to come out with. Wake up everybody, as Hal Marilyn Bruno said in their song, wake up everybody.
Mm-hmm.
No more sleeping in bed. No more backwards thinking. Let's start looking ahead. It's time for us to come together in spite of our color and differences and unite as a people.
And that was written by Delamar Deveras.
Delamar, okay.
Delamar Deveras, that was the author of that poem, and I love it to this day.
I mean, it's a beautiful piece. You say that Oprah Winfrey's great-grandfather owned slaves in Mississippi?
Yeah, great-granddaddy Constantine out of Kosciuszko, Mississippi, where my wife is from.
Really?
If you check the history of it, and if you look at her autobiography and Gates, he played around with it. But it would come out because she's such a powerhouse. But I'm not afraid to bring it out the fact that it's based on common sense.
Really?
According to the history, Grandpa Constantine got some land from a local slave owner, a white guy, of 80 acres, and agreed to pay him back in bales of cotton. 80 acres of land. Now remember, he didn't have no John Deere tractor. Mm-hmm. He didn't have no Massey Ferguson. All he had was old Joe Mule. And apply some seeds. How can one man plant 80 acres of cotton, harvest it, bale it, and get it to the gin and do 80 bales a year without help?
But you say
the fact that he brought in slaves because the following year he had 160 acres. So do the math.
But you say
Grandpa Cousin was a bad motor scooter, or he had a lot of connections.
Okay, and you also said that Oprah's great-great-grandmother, Amanda...
Great-great-grandma, Amanda. Yes, Oprah's actually a reincarnated of her great-great-grandmother because her great-great-grandmother back in that time built schools for poor whites and poor blacks and educated them.
Really?
Check out her autobiography and get down to her great-great-grandma, Amanda.
Okay.
Don't believe nothing I say. Do the research.
So you're saying everything that you wrote is not speculation, it's research.
I'm trying to tell you now.
Okay.
I've been called a name, books, authors, pages. Come on now.
I'm not debating any of it. I'm going with you on this because I believe that if the Bible has been altered, definitely history as far as slavery has been altered.
It's his story, remember? He can tell it like he wants to tell it. It's not a time for us to tell our mystery. Because our mystery, it sure is not his story.
Oh, this is very true. So what do you want, how do people reach you in terms of getting your book and finding out more information about this period?
They can write me at P.O. Box 1452, Tallulah, Louisiana. I'm in Washita country. Okay, 1452, P.O. Box 1452, Tallulah, Louisiana. That's T-A-L-L-U-L-A-H, Louisiana. Zip code is 71284. And my name is Dr. Yashubaya.
Can you give them your name and how to spell it?
My name is, the way you spell my name is Y-A-S-H-A-B-I-Y-A-H.
Okay.
Yashubaya.
Okay, in closing, we're down to our last few minutes. You can give us any more information that maybe we left out of the book. I think I try to cover everything, but is there any other information you want to tell them about your book?
I think that's what's in the chew on right there. And if they want to know more, I'm sure they can contact you if they want to do a follow-up, because we have not begun to share what we haven't got close to what we have in this book, just only some excerpts.
Wow. Okay.
But I like when they purchase the book and read it, and then they decide for themselves. Go take the information and do the research, and then try to find something to disprove it. If you can prove me wrong, I invite you to prove me wrong. But I'm not afraid it's going to be a hard job.
Really? So you're challenging anyone who does not believe your account of slavery that you can prove what you said through your research to them?
Yeah, I can prove it to them. Not only me. I just discovered today that David Duke is going to find out about some of this stuff. You know David Duke?
David Duke?
He's a white writer coming along late. He was a conspiracy theorist. I see he found out about the record now. Oh. So it's not hidden out there. We just need to look in the right places. I am not the only one who written about these things, maybe in this day and time, but there was those before me that wrote about it.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I stepped outside the box,
okay.
And we need to look back at the box.
So not just look at the movie Roots, the miniseries, and say, okay, that's history. That's our history of slavery. We really should take more responsibility of knowing what happened for ourselves and reading books like yours to find out what we may have not heard through Roots and any of the other rumors that we may have heard about slavery.
Look, Hollywood did a job on us, sister.
Wow.
And people need to get up, put some money together, and take a trip. Go and visit these places. Talk to your old ancestors. You know, I'd like you to get a chance. Go on, when you go online, we get off the air. Type in your search in black cities in America, black-owned towns in America. It will utterly shock you how many black towns that black folks own in this country.
Currently today.
Today. That black folks founded and established in this country. We have been living beneath our privilege as a nation of people. We built this country. It belongs to us, and it's time to step up and begin to reclaim it. Quit shagging and bagging, quit hip-hopping, quit gangbanging, and start reclaiming your land and become the people you were chosen to be by your divine creator.
Didn't you say something in your book about if we knew who we really were?
Yeah.
How do you phrase it? If black people knew who they really
were? We would turn the world around overnight.
We put a lot of things, a lot of cookies.
Thank
you so much for being my guest again, Cohine. To my listening audience, thank you again for tuning in, and we'll see you next week. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.